by the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. On the back end of the top 10 now for our guest mock draft. It's been very exciting so far. We've had a lot of great guests. So far in this guest mock draft, we've had Joe Burrow go number one, Chase Young number two, Jeff Okuda number three, Jedrick Wills four, Tua Tagovailoa five, Justin Herbert six, and now we are up to number seven and the Carolina Panthers. Ben, Justin Herbert, I guess, going to the Chargers, I don't know about a little bit of a surprise, but that definitely tells the tale of the rest of this mock draft, because they could have left Justin Herbert on the board, and then things would have got real interesting. But now, here we are, six picks in, half of them are quarterbacks. What do you think is going to happen here at number seven?
Yeah, no, I'd said of six, it could go different ways. I think it went the way that it should have, and now seven is officially like, aha, yes, a coaching staff, we have no idea what they're doing, and they're making many trades and decisions we would not make. This is where things get really weird. So I have no idea, but
yeah,
we'll figure it out.
I'm very excited to dig into this pick, because we have back with us again Jordan Rodrigue from The Athletic. Jordan was actually on this series last year with us, did a great job recapping everything that went on with the Panthers season and the wild roller coaster that 2018 was. Somehow 2019 was even crazier. So we knew we had to get Jordan back on with us to catch up with everything going on in the Carolina Panthers. Jordan, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, I was just thinking to myself, I would like a normal off season at some point. That would be really nice.
Listen, as someone who has covered another NFC South team, that doesn't exist. Normal off seasons just do not exist in the NFC South, and that's just the way that it is. So, longtime coach Ron Rivera is out. Now Matt Rhule is in. Before we get into all of that, though, I just want to go back to kind of, I want to get your take on what happened in 2019 with Cam Newton, with Ron Rivera, with the guys on the rest of the roster, what the attitude felt like in the building, because there was a lot of change in Carolina this offseason. So just in it, from your own perspective, what the heck happened in 2019?
Yeah, well, for those listening, I would advise doing so with a strong drink, because this was a wild year. Okay, so basically the Panthers were built to win. They were set up with just a loaded amount of either one-year contracts from free agents, and for the first time in recent Panthers history, pretty solid and like top-tier free agents. Normally they would kind of wait to the second wave, but this time they brought in like Bruce Irvin and Gerald McCoy. And so they were, most of their defense were on 1 year deals, and they were set up to win in 2019. And, you know, on the surface, the roster very much looked that way. And then Cam Newton got hurt in the third week of the preseason. And then, you know, ended up having to go on injured reserve, tried to play through the first two games, was not himself at all. And after that, things started a very slow and kind of painful spiral downward. And so without Cam Newton, you know, with Cam Newton being healthy, this had the appearance of a playoff-ready team that could make a deep run. And without Cam Newton, you know, they started to spiral a little. And then they lost two key guys on their defensive line in KK Short and Dontari Poe, both to injury. And it just was not, it just didn't, they just started leaking everywhere. Hmm. And it was a just huge mess. The promise that Kyle Allen showed early on really faltered, because he could not take care of the football. His touchdown turnover ratio was like obscene. And it was a very slow and really painful spiral downward. And so that was, I think, really frustrating for a lot of people within the organization, because this was a team that really was ready to make a run and a deep run. And Ron Rivera knew under new ownership that, you know, it was time to put up or shut up. And so, you know, things were not going well. He was fired with four games left in the season. And, you know, a new staff got brought in, and they immediately began cleaning house. Greg Olson Cam Newton, Luke Kuechly retired. You know, these things, other than Kuechly, these things we, you know, were kind of, you know, the sources, the topic of much speculation throughout the season. You know, cleaning out most of the defense. I don't even think they could roster a starting defense at this point. They're really rebuilding on that end. And, you know, the sentiment at the end of the season was this team is not even going to try to win its last four games after Ron Rivera got fired. And it's not for lack of the players wanting to do so. The feeling within the building was that firing Ron Rivera was a message from up top that they did not want to win the last four games because they wanted to be set up in a better position in the draft this spring.
All right. So,
yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, so we used to, one thing stands out to me right away. You know, they immediately started cleaning house, and you name these tremendous players, these veteran players, these beloved players, who all end up outside of Carolina. It's tough to identify the current faces of this franchise. I guess probably KK Short, Christian McCaffrey is kind of who you're leaning on, but so many storied players for the Panthers have gone. What is, you know, in terms of, it's probably difficult to get a read on the Panthers fan base. The Panthers fan base is stuck inside. But, you know, when you go through such a tough rebuild, such a hard reset, what's the degree of faith right now? I know that Marty Herney is retained. Is there an idea that he's kind of a sitting duck? He's dead in the water. Is the Rule, Matt Rule and Joe Brady, are those hirings galvanizing enough to keep everybody's faith up? Like, this is such a hard stage of team building to be in. Where are the Panthers fan bases now that, like, the franchise just completely changed over what we've known for the past several years?
Well, they're pretty vocal and they're pretty pissed. So I think part of it is you know that old phrase, like, it's not what you said, it's how you said it.
Sure.
That's the argument right now that people are really frustrated with. Because I think everyone, if you kind of step back and step out of fandom for a minute and look at it logically, I mean, cycles all, you know, come to a close in the NFL, eras end. The Panthers tried to hang on to this, like, 2015 magic with a lot of those core guys for as long as they could. And I think Ron Rivera was very much invested in trying to preserve even a piece of that as long as he could. But eras end, and so if the owner wanted to completely clean house and rebuild, but in a way where they actually, you know, are hoping to win games next year, which is odd. So they're kind of like in a half rebuild on the fly kind of thing right now, and so you know, the fan base is frustrated, and there were some very not glamorous ways that certain people were released. You know, Ron Rivera fired on a Tuesday, couldn't tell his players. They got an email from the PR team. Like, you know, you can't.
Yeah.
And then they brought him back sort of as like a corrective move to have like a farewell tour, essentially. And, you know, Greg Olsen getting essentially cut, but the team puts it out like they have mutually agreed to part ways. And then he comes out and he's like, no, we did not. This was not mutual. And then the Cam Newton situation, you know, like saying, hey, we've given him permission to seek a trade while the Panthers were trying to manufacture a trade market for Cam for a long time and could not do it. And when they informed Cam Newton's camp that they were going to trade him, you know, they knew it was coming, but they never asked for it. And then they phrased it like he had asked for it. And then he comes out and says, no, I didn't do that. You forced me into this. You know, the messiness of it is really a source of frustration for the Panthers mm-hmm. fan base right now. And I don't know that they have a ton of faith because they're kind of venturing into the unknown right now. I mean, they don't really have any tangible NFL specific proof that Matt Rule is going to get the job done, you know, in the next 3 years or so in Carolina. They see that he's bringing in his entire college staff, several of his players from Temple, will probably draft several of his players from Baylor and Joe Brady's right. players from LSU. And they're seeing like, oh, cool, so we could be Clemson. Well, what else? You know, kind of a thing. So I think that there's a lot of uncertainty and I don't think they have a lot to put stock in right now. So I'm interested. The draft will be huge for them, obviously, because this is where they're going to start to build their core.
I want to go into the Cam Newton timeline, and we're going to get back a little bit to the long-term future of just Carolina. I definitely want to talk about that because it's very, very interesting what they're doing. But I want to talk about Cam's timeline. How did it all go this wrong? Because I just feel like there are ways, and I get it, it's a business, right? Basically, he's hurt, he's getting up there in age, it was a higher contract, you're looking to move on anyways, you're looking to turn the page, but it just seemed like they didn't do this the right way. And I know, I've seen how this is done, because I watched the Bucks botch Gerald McCoy moving on, right? And that was something that I felt like they did not do very well. But, I mean, for goodness sake, they put out a graphic saying, thank you, Cam Newton, when Cam was still on the team. You know, like, that. I just,
yeah.
This whole situation had been so weird for me. So, I just, like, what was the thought of Cam going into this year? And I know the injuries didn't help, but I'd love for you to go a little bit more in depth in the Cam Newton timeline and when things really started to not just turn the page, but then sour when they turned the page the way that it did.
Well, and that's a great question too, because, you know, he was still a part of what they thought could be in their future plans for a long time. I mean, I think when, you know, we have been reporting that some in the organization, including higher up, they were ready to move on and bring in kind of a fresh face of the franchise, new owner, that kind of thing. And his contract coming up at that point was kind of amenable to what that plan was. But at the same time, this is, you know, as he gets hurt, it's Lisfranc is such an ambiguous injury that they really couldn't say whether or not, you know, they could definitively, first of all, move him, or second of all, have him play out his contract. And so things really started, the writing kind of was on the wall when Ron Rivera got fired, because at that point, Cam was just about making his decision to have the surgery, which would put a definitive timeline on recovery, and tell not only the Panthers, but other teams, this is what day I'll be ready to go. But then, you know, as Ron Rivera gets fired, he's tied to Cam, that he drafted him in 2011. And Cam Newton and Ron will be the first one to say Cam Newton has been a huge reason for Ron's success as a coach. Mm-hmm. And so the two were very much linked together. And so when that happened, you're like, okay, well, nobody's really safe at this point. You know, Greg Olsen gets cut. The guys that Cam Newton has played with for so long start kind of falling off of the roster. You start to really make, you know, the writing is certainly on the wall. But the part that became so messy, guys, and I cannot emphasize this enough, is that you have Cam Newton who's coming out and saying on Radio Row at the Super Bowl, like, hey, I just had a great talk with Matt Rhule and his staff. They were inspiring. I absolutely believe that I'm going to be a part of the Carolina Panthers in 2020, and I would like to be in Carolina. I want to stay in Carolina my entire career. And you have an owner who, in his only public comments on the subject, will not commit to him, will not commit to Cam, and is offering the caveat, like, okay, if he's healthy, I would love to have him as my starting quarterback. If he's healthy, we will talk then. It's fluid until he's healthy. So all this time behind the scenes, you know, as this new coaching staff is getting hired, the decision makers, including Matt Rhule, are coming up with different plans for what they're going to do at quarterback. And there was not just one plan. It wasn't just get rid of Cam, find a new quarterback. It was, okay, let's assess our risks. You know, David Tepper being a hedge fund guy, like, yeah, let's assess our risks. We have, we could play Cam Newton on the last year of his, you know, it's 2020 contract. We're not going to extend him because of his injury history and his age. We are going to try to play him. If he cannot play in 2020, if he gets hurt again, we have two backup quarterbacks who we know are not going to win us a lot of football games. That sets us up in a position to get a quarterback in 2021. Okay, so that's one plan. Another plan, per multiple sources within, you know, the organization, was having a discussion about trading up for Joe Burrow. Well, that's too high risk as well, because you can't offer that much capital when you're trying to build a roster and you have that many holes on defense in particular, and you cannot do that. But to pair Joe Brady with Joe Burrow, I mean, it's too perfect, right? But it just would take too much. So that's another high risk situation. And so then you have the idea of this quarterback who you've been watching play for the Saints this past season, who you've liked for a long time, who also has ties to Joe Brady, and that's Teddy Bridgewater. And you hear it first, this is what, you know, they heard it first that he was going to cost too much money. Okay, well, once he got into a position, and as, you know, they're putting out there in a sponsored documentary series released by the team, Matt Rhule's comments on wanting to have a healthy Cam Newton on his roster in 2020 and can't wait to work with him. And I want to make a statement that I can't wait to work for him. And this is what the team is putting out via sponsored documentary on its own website.
Wow.
And its own 4 million following social media page. And they're putting that out. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, they're starting to realize that Teddy Bridgewater actually is going to become available at a lower price. And so that ends up being their move a couple of days before the tampering period begins. Marty Herney goes to Cam Newton's camp and says, hey, we're going to trade him. At that point, I'm told, you know, Cam's camp is like, all right, we understand, but also could we have a little more autonomy in this particular process? Marty Herney says, sure. Then the PR side releases a statement saying they gave him permission to seek a trade.
Well, this is exhausting.
So the disconnect between the football side of it and the PR / like messaging is so huge at that point that to me, and from what I've heard, that's what Cam Newton like took issue with. And I know I'm rambling at this point, but it's really important to get a clear picture of this.
Yeah, no, this is like the biggest national story. So all the details you could throw in here, the better, honestly.
Yeah, and so the idea is like, okay, why would you phrase it that way when the reality is letting him go was always one of the options. They had him also, keeping him was one of the options. Mm-hmm. However, that was a higher risk than ultimately knowing that they could get Teddy Bridgewater, which was their lowest risk option. He's got a really team friendly deal. They could part ways after 2 years if they want to, if they have another quarterback. They've got PJ Walker, who they love the idea of developing. They could position themselves in 2021. You know, they have more autonomy now that with these guys that they have on the roster. And so it became their lowest risk option. And that's really what it was. And people would have understood that. People, the fan base would have gotten that. They would have understood it. But instead, the messaging that was put out was about, giving him permission. Thank you so much for your service while you're on the roster. Also, here's our new franchise quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, like it was very messy. And so I think that's where this whole timeline gets so complicated.
Man.
So extremely messy handling the free agency of Cam Newton. We turn our eyes to the draft with a new head coach and what we imagine to be an influential offensive coordinator, a new and aggressive owner with a ton of new players at different positions, and a incumbent general manager. And my immediate question is, who's calling the shots come April 23rd? And so obviously, you know, the extent to which you've had access to the new arrangement and the new deal in the front office is obviously limited. But when it comes to draft night, you said they're probably going to go draft some Baylor Bears. Do we think Rhule is calling the shots from a personnel perspective? Do we think Herney's just running the scouting? How much is Tepper going to be involved? What does the organization of this front office look like when it comes to handing in a card to make a pick?
Yeah, especially with the top picks, I think that Matt Rhule will have a larger control than usually you see with a coach and GM tandem. Because, and let's not forget, I mean, Marty Herney's contract runs through 2020. That's it. He has not been extended, and he will probably will not be. But Matt Rhule's contract runs for the next 7 years. So he's going to try to have that autonomy as much as he can to bring in guys who kind of align with what he wants. And, you know, my perception is like Marty Herney has always just like really wanted to just go watch football. And so for him to be more on the scouting side, that's all well and good. But you're going to be seeing a lot of picks, I think, in this draft that are very reflective of Matt Rhule and the type of athlete that he favors. And so I think that makes not just the seventh overall pick interesting, but also the possibility of trading back. Also, you know, the type and style of athlete that they're going to be wanting to bring in.
So, all right, so Denzel Mims at number seven overall. That's what I got from this. No, but speaking
James
of
number, no, yeah. I'm just kidding.
But hey, number seven overall here in the guest mock series. You are on the clock. You talked about defense being in need. You've talked about some of the more high risk opportunities versus low risk opportunities when it comes to maybe what they want to do at quarterback. So, seeing how it is here with the Carolina Panthers, very interested, where are you going at number seven overall?
Well, I'm going to pick Javon Kinlaw.
Hello!
Javon Kinlaw!
I know. I'm going to probably get some interesting comments for that one. But
it's okay.
Think,
no one listens to our podcast. It's fine.
That's not true. My mom listens.
So I told you guys I have actually some educated reasoning. So bear with me.
Oh, let's hear it. No, let's hear it. I'm all about it. Let's go.
So to be fair, I could also, if he's available, I could also see this being Isaiah Simmons, based on just kind of they really, Phil Snow as the defensive coordinator really loves these hybrid guys, and I could very much see that. However, I know internally they are really looking at position value. And up front will have the most value for them at that pick point. And they want a guy who can be in the interior, who can be a core player, who will blend kind of a growing, not perfect, but growing ability to stop the run while also being able to really wreak havoc against the pass. And so I think the thing that separates a Derrick Brown, who they very much need a guy like that at nose. They don't have one. Well, they have one, but he's kind of a backup. They need a nose as well. But with Javon Kinlaw, the pass rush ability and the production and the ability to line up in a variety of places, I think they kind of salivate looking at him and seeing kind of the opportunities he could provide for them defensively. You know, they're going to be in a 4-3, but they'll be multiple. And they're going to want one of their interior guys to be able to line up in a variety of different spots and just kind of play mind games with whoever is at quarterback. And so I think Javon Kinlaw is that type of guy. I think they really love his story, and they really love him as a core leader in the locker room as they move forward. And they particularly love that he has not even scratched the surface of his potential yet. And Matt Rhule is all about building up guys, building up players, building up talent. And so that, to me, all signs to me point in that regard to Javon Kinlaw and Kawan Short being, you know, up there in years and coming off a major surgery. That also helps me point to a guy like Javon Kinlaw being kind of the heir apparent of that defensive line.
I know that pick is definitely going to raise some eyebrows, but it was, you know, it's funny after the Senior Bowl. And Javon Kinlaw's stock was so high because everybody heard him at the podium and listened to him talk and heard his story. And then, you know, you watch him dominate practices and you go, wow, you know, him and Derrick Brown, what an incredible interior line class this would be. But we often just assume that Derrick Brown's going to go number or going to be the first interior defensive lineman. And as we know from NFL history and draft history, there are probably more teams than we're willing to admit that might have Javon Kinlaw as their number one interior defensive tackle. So I love this pick because it's definitely getting the imagination and the conversations going. Before I let you go, Jordan, there's something that I definitely wanted to ask you, and it was a point that you had talked about before when you were assessing kind of their quarterback situation, and really even when you talked about them firing Ron Rivera and not wanting to win those last four games. We talk about tanking all the time as an NFL draft community, right? The more games you lose, the higher pick you have, the better player you can acquire. That's the name of the game. Mm-hmm. But we know that it's not always that easy, right? Because more than just the wins and losses, it's a business. People's jobs are at stake. You know, there's all kinds of things that go into it. For this Panthers team, I mean, could they really be, I don't want to say punting on the year, but you know, you talked about potentially looking at the quarterback class in 2021. Are we potentially going to see a Carolina Panthers franchise work towards a draft that is a year away, more than maybe we've ever seen any team do before?
No, I don't think so. And that's just kind of, you know, that's my instinct right now, because I think that again is too much of a high risk probability for what this owner is comfortable with. I think, you know, they would have the time to do it, you know, with Matt Rule's contract being what
it
is.
Yeah, sure.
But we don't know that he can keep that staff intact, particularly Joe Brady. We don't know that he can keep him around long enough to tank and then also then build a winning roster, you know, in 2020, maybe 2022 would be when they're ready if they do tank and get a quarterback. And so I think personally, I would find it hard to believe this is an owner who saw so many empty seats this last season without Cam Newton, who really really chaps him when they don't win and when they aren't winning, but was able to kind of eat that to, you know, put them in a higher probability for this draft pick late in the season. But I don't see that being a sustainable option for them. I think it's very hard to tank. And I think that if you have a new coaching staff, you have the optics around the league that you are not treating your veteran players well when you're kind of offloading them. You have that reputation. You have a brand new coaching staff. Nobody really knows what to expect from them. You have a lot of needs and a lot of holes to fill. And then you bring in a guy at quarterback who can maybe win you, you know, several games throughout the course of the season. I don't know that you have a great appeal around the league if you are, you know, kind of putting it out there that you're tanking and you're trying to do that. I think it's too much of a high risk probability to want to really say, all right, we're definitely going for Trevor Lawrence and that's the plan. And, you know, even when you see Miami try to tank, I feel like the Panthers and them had the same record at the end of the year.
And, is it the same?
You know, I think so. And so you're like, okay, if it's that hard to tank, you know, at least try to amass trade capital and then, you know, pay to move up to get the guy you want. And I think that's more aligned with what this owner believes in. Is, I mean, the dude dropped $300 million on an MLS team. You know,
yeah, right.
He's gonna be okay with paying to move up if he has to.
Yeah, you are right. Both those teams are 5-11. Well, I feel like no matter what happens, win or loss, the next calendar year, Carolina is going to be the talk of the town in the NFL because they're going to have such a say in what's going on, and people are going to be monitoring that situation. So I know it's going to be an exciting time for you. Jordan, that was fantastic. You gave us so much detail of some of, the most notable and national stories that we've been talking about over the last couple of months. So we really, really appreciate you joining the podcast again this year.
Thanks for having me, guys. You know, it's always a pleasure, and a big fan of you guys' work. And thank you for the simulator that I am using on a daily basis.
There it is. The organic plug. We promise we didn't pay her to say that. Okay. Number seven.
Drop the seven rounder. I want to see it.
Seven in the books. Javon Kinlaw off the board. Arizona Cardinals, they're picking number eight. They're up next. We thought that, you know, since they added DeAndre Hopkins, maybe they wouldn't be picking at eight, but that's not the case. They have Hopkins and number eight, which means the possibilities are wide open. So you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.